So are you worried? Are you worried now?
That's a good question. You know, after the Medium piece was published in 2014 and it got so much attention, and, you know, it even reached the point where Buddy Caldwell, who was the AG of Louisiana, was asked about it. So it got an extraordinary amount of attention. I mean, actually, I think that piece has received the most attention of anything I've ever published. And that includes my first book, which got a lot of attention because it was about 50 Cent and and a lot of people that people everywhere are familiar with. So, you know, that Medium piece got an extraordinary amount of attention. And the pushback on the piece from law enforcement out there was pretty extraordinary. And it included the sheriff out there posting this message about me without naming me, but it was very clearly me, on the sheriff's department website. And that message is still up there. And to me, that very much struck me as a kind of most wanted take on me. And that was truly terrifying. That came in the early spring of 2014. And my response to that was to avoid the parish completely for several months. And I believe I'd gotten the book deal or was in the process of getting the book deal. So I had work to do in terms of witness interviewing and other kinds of research. And at that period, I was just talking about this the other day, I would drive out to Jeff Davis Parish. When I got near the parish, I would call the witness that I was meeting and say, "I'm 5 minutes away. Come outside your house. I'm not getting out of my car to knock on your door." So I would pull up to the person's house. They would be waiting for me. They would jump in my car, and then we would then gun my car out of the parish into Acadia Parish, typically, because Acadia, you can get to Acadia in like 10 minutes, mm-hmm. you know, depending on where you're at in Jeff Davis. So that's what I did for a while. Darted in and out of there. Then, you know, interestingly, you know, for as much attention as it got, things really cooled down for a while. And I went back to Jeff Davis Parish constantly after that period. And I was seen by everybody. It's a small parish, small town. I would go to court to pick up records. Go to the sheriff's department to pick up records. I remember one time I went to the sheriff's office to pick up records and I saw the sheriff sort of look at me from behind a desk. So, you know, I was there quite visibly and quite often. And to your original question, I'm sorry to give a kind of roundabout answer to it. The way that folks out there tend to respond to things is very reactive versus proactive. So, for example, they knew the Medium piece was coming, and they didn't do anything about it until long after it was published. My belief is that I'm going to know what the response is going to be to this only after this book is published.
So what do you hope for from this book? Who is, yeah, I mean, when you were writing it, who did you have in mind as the reader? What do you see happening as a result?
Yeah.
This is a terrific risk for you. It's dispiriting work.
Yeah.
It's, you know, labor intensive,
right.
Lord knows. So what is it you hope will come about as a result of this book?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I think as far as readership, I hope that anybody who's interested in great cases, you know, will be interested in this. I hope that anybody who likes these sorts of cases, and I don't just mean serial homicide cases, I just mean criminal cases in general, approached from a very methodical sort of basis, you know, folks who liked making murder or serial or anything like that. I hope, you know, that those folks will appreciate this and like it. As far as what I hope happens with the case, you know, early on, I was hopeful in the Department of Justice getting involved in this somehow. Since then, I've watched the DOJ and its involvement in a number of places. Baltimore, here in New Orleans, obviously. And my opinion is that DOJ involvement has been extraordinarily costly to the places it goes, for, you know, with these consent decrees over police departments and jails. Not all that effective in terms of turning things around. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't think it would be harmful, right, if the DOJ did a, you know, what's called a pattern and practice investigation, right? So a pattern and practice investigation, you're looking into patterns and practices of unconstitutional policing. And that's what happened with the NOPD. It's what's happening in Baltimore with the Baltimore police. I don't think that would be unhelpful out there, especially given the history of the sheriff's office and the police department out there. But I'm also not hugely optimistic about it, right, about what it might yield. As far as the investigation into the homicides themselves, I can't say it would be unhelpful, but I'd be, you know, I'd wonder what the outcome might be. You know, I think it would be helpful if the DOJ Civil Rights Division looked into this case, because there's such extraordinary allegations of police involvement in these murders and extraordinary allegations of destruction of evidence and other examples of misconduct out there in this case.
Now, we should say this because I find it so fascinating. Now, you are a licensed private investigator yourself.
Yes.
And so that gave you, you know, a particular set of skills to bring to this investigation.
Right. So after my last book, Shake the Devil Off, was published in 2009, I had reached a point for a number of reasons where I was just sick of publishing, sick of writing, sick of everything. And I had another kind of odd thing. I'd befriended another PI when I wrote my first book, Queens Reign Supreme. And this guy was an elderly African-American retired FBI agent who became a PI. And he was retained by the defense in the case that Queens Reign Supreme focuses on, which is a money laundering case brought by the feds against a very, very lucrative and extraordinarily popular hip-hop label called Murder, Inc. Mm-hmm. So we became really friendly, and actually we're still friends to this day. This was over 10 years ago, and I had really – I liked him a lot, and I had really had a real appreciation for the work that he did in that case for the defense. The defendants, by the way, were acquitted on all charges. And I thought he'd done some really incredible work on that case. And was fascinated by his work. And I remained in touch with him. And I'd always thought, you know, I like this work. I like the people who do it generally. And this could be something that I could do at some point. So post Shake the Devil Off, again, I was just not wanting to sort of go on with publishing in the media, and had this long-term, long-running interest in investigative work. And I heard about an opening for an investigator at a law office in downtown New Orleans that handles capital cases only.
Right.
Applied for it. Didn't think I would get the job, mostly because really everybody in that office is, you know, extremely passionate about the death penalty. I, you know, didn't really have any death penalty expertise, no real interest in the death penalty. And I even said as much during the job interview, but I was offered the job in the months after Shake the Devil Off was published. And I took it, and just through an extraordinary kind of luck, and I won't name the cases, but I worked on a kind of greatest hits of the biggest murder cases in New Orleans in the, I would say, in the past 20 to 30 years, and maybe even in New Orleans history.
That's saying something.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a remarkable, remarkable time, and I had remarkable bosses as well, most importantly. And I worked there for about 2.5 years. And one of the main things that I did, and this is the main thing that I applied to the Jeff Davis Haidt investigation, was learn all about Louisiana's Public Records Act and how to use it. And the spine, really, of this book is the Public Records Act and all of my requests under it. So.
Hard work, hard work, I swear.